What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of Teeing It Up, your favorite Metro Detroit sports and analytics podcast. I'm your host, Connor, as always, with my co-host, the V of C and V, Vladdy. What's up, man? Another delayed episode in the week, but don't worry, guys, we're back for another one.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if you're just farther away from the mic, but that seems to be one of the least enthusiastic intros I've ever heard from you. So maybe
Sorry,
we should
sorry.
bring.
I have to be a little quieter. I got people on work calls in other rooms in the building I'm in.
Tell them to get off the call with China or Malaysia, whoever on the phone. But I'll bring some energy if you won't do it. I'm amazing. I left work early today. My boss was like, "Yeah, I'm working from home Wednesday, Thursday," and I was like, "Well, that's great because Real Madrid plays Man City, and I'm just not gonna be in the office, and he's not gonna know." So that was good. I watched that game. Very stressful. That's probably the most stressed I've been about a game for Real Madrid in a very, very long time. I would say I ran out of fingernails, and I'm not kidding. Like there is no more like you know how like when your fingernail kind of gets past the thing, it starts like turning a different color from the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've run out of all of that on my fingernails right now. It is pretty much just like almost like kind of the raw skin underneath. If this is all possible, I pulled out more of my hair. I'm just that was an absolute nervous wreck fest. Well, went to penalties against Man City, won 4-3 on penalties, knocked them out. They will not be a repeat champion, and I am doing amazing. Oh my God, I still haven't really gotten fully over it, or so we'll see if I'm kind of going into a space cadet mode at any point of this. But how are you? How have you been the last kind of week plus? As you mentioned, this is going to be a later episode.
Yeah, I'm good. Finished up classes for me. Those that don't know, I'm in graduate school. So now I got this 2 week period here, and then we take the exams, and you're on your merry little way to your third year of school. But first, you get a 9 to 5 summer. So, but I'm good. I'm enjoying the system of life, I guess, at this point, whatever that means. But I'm happy to be talking about sports as always. So we also have another mixed bag episode of sports today. Three different main topics. There'll always be subtopics. The first topic is the Masters. So
Yes.
let's get into it. Scottie Scheffler, four shot champion, the number one player of the world, undisputed. He's inevitable, I guess, is where you start. I think it starts and ends with Scottie Scheffler. He was no worse than, I think, third after any day in this event. He was the number one player going into it. He was a past champion. The ball striking. Now that Rory McIlroy told him to use a mallet putter, he uses a mallet putter and he can putt lights out. There's no flaws in his game. He's kind of, I know people are making these like crazy, somewhat crazy to me still, Tiger Woods comparisons. I'm going to go not quite take the most drastic route, but it is the best, especially because it's only been two majors. Probably the best run we've seen from this young of a player in dominant fashion since Rory, when Rory first got on the scene about 10 to 12 years ago. That's about what I would compare it to at this point.
So I guess I'm gonna be a little bit more, and I'm not gonna say like I remember the Rory dominance, but I do think he is. And again, I hope you're not saying when people say Tiger comparisons, I don't think people genuinely mean, oh my God, like this guy is as good as he was, because yes, those statistics, 6 years straight of number one, whatever, all of them, we all know him. Those won't ever probably replicate it. But I mean, when you compare the gap between him and the rest of the field, I do think you can look at kind of what Tiger Woods was doing. It's just, you mentioned it. He was probably one of the three or four worst players on tour with a putter in his hand. He was still winning basically every, not basically everything, but he was still winning a sizable lot of events, and he was competing at the highest level, finishing top two at a higher rate than he was missing cuts. And then, like you mentioned, now they've put a mallet putter in his hand. I don't know if he's, I don't think he's necessarily hit lights out, but he's gotten to a point where he's just average. And that was always his biggest thing, was he would show up at an event, he'd be dead last on anybody out of anybody on the green. And it's like, you look at that, you look at the scoreboard, and he's still top five every week. And you're like, well, how does this work? He sits there. I am comfortable in saying this is probably the most dominant golfer since Tiger, kind of when you compare what his skill gap is between himself and the rest of the field.
All right, so here's I agreed until I saw this. Their first 120 events. This is Rory and Scottie Scheffler.
Okay.
Majors. Scheffler 2, Rory 4. Wins. Scheffler 9, Rory 13.
Okay.
Top 3, Scheffler 27, Rory only 23. Top 10s, 51 for Scheffler, 57 for Rory. Top 25s tied at 79, missed cuts, Scheffler 19, Rory 14.
Okay, that's fair. Those
So
that's
relatively the same,
yeah,
if
no,
not
and
different.
that's pretty good statistic hunting. That again, I'm not gonna sit here and pretend like I watched golf or cared about golf back then.
True.
That yeah, it's remarkable.
Suck the fun out of Sunday. I'll just say
Yes,
that.
it that's actually
It's just
that's
kind of how
perfect.
it's, and it's not even just how much he wows you, it's just how inevitably consistent he is. And you saw kind of all the other big names on Sunday go down. Like Morikawa doubles 9 and 11. Åberg doubled 11. Homa doubled the par three after he put it in the bush behind the green. And they all had their slip ups, but you. Scheffler was the only one of those kind of four or five names I just read off that didn't have any slip up. And you kind of thought, I think they got to 15 and Åberg had birdied 14 and 15 and he cut it down to two. And what does Scheffler do? He tough par on 14 and he birdies 15 after being in the bunker for his third shot and it was over from there. He birdied the 16 par three as well. And it was not even close the last two holes.
Yeah, I think that you mentioned the kind of fun sucking. I saw some kind of some ratings, if you will, from this year compared to last year. It was down
So
drastically.
I have somewhat of a gripe with those ratings because I don't think they include because and I know that the Masters app wasn't new this year, but like I don't think that includes and covers like how big and how many people do use that app.
That's a
And I think that the app's only grown too as people are more aware of it as well. It's because it is the best app there is as far
Yes.
as watching an event.
If we if
It's so amazing how much more you get out of this major than all the other ones combined just because of the app.
yeah, if you want to talk about a storyline, you mentioned that I kind of dabbled around with it on Thursday and Friday. I didn't get to watch as much of kind of the tournament on Saturday, Sunday, just because I was playing golf myself. But if you sit there and you kind of dabble, you can create your own group pretty much and watch all of their shots, albeit not totally live, but that's fine. You sit there and you have all the different kind of corners, the featured groups, the one, two, threes, whatever it might be, and it's free. That's the biggest part is
Yeah.
you don't have, you're not hiding it behind a cable package, you're not hiding it behind a streaming subscription. It's beautiful. So that's actually a pretty valid point as well. You're on fire today. So I don't really have, I'm not really gonna say much more. If we want to talk about some other storylines, I thought Bryson was pretty interesting because he showed up on the first round, dropped up what was a -7.
Seven, yeah.
And but the for me the funniest part was you saw the thing about his 3D printed irons, right?
Yes. And they were approved this past Monday
Yeah.
by the USGA to be used in this event. My impression of it was like it had to be like the USGA just didn't really know what to do. So they were just like, yeah, sure.
Just go.
How moving forward can he be allowed to use a club that is designed and printed to have a smaller miss margin?
Yeah, I mean,
Or is it just the next evolution of technology in golf?
I didn't necessarily look into kind of the technicalities of what they ruled and why they ruled what they did and what those clubs were. I just kind of heard the this guy showed up with clubs that were approved 3 days before tee time
Yeah.
and they were 3D printed. And it's like, well, that maybe it is the next evolution where maybe it's one step further than getting your clubs fitted. Maybe this is, like you say, the next new, oh my God, I need to personalize this to myself. And they look at more data for these people, and everyone goes down that route until a bunch of people start bitching and they all get banned. But I thought that was super interesting. Obviously, he ended up kind of sputtering out and
Yeah.
finishing what it
But
is. But
it's
I,
good to see him back in the mixing majors because he
yes.
is a storyline hog with stuff like that, just being the mad scientist that he is.
Yeah, and I again the he's really grown on me as kind of he's lost that stupid hat that he used to have when he was younger,
Yeah.
and he's kind of, I don't know if you watch his YouTube channel, but I do think he kind of has realized that content creation has kind of become this massive thing, especially with the younger generations. And he goes about and he plays with the YouTube golfers, he plays with the kind of the celebrities, and he's always trying these fun challenges. And I actually do enjoy what he does and how he kind of tries to grow golf.
Yes. Yeah, I think I agree. I've also kind of changed my tune on him a little bit seeing him like that. And maybe it helps that he's not just like this like protein shake, so much unhealthy gut, 240-pound guy. Yeah, that could barely move his arms back and forth. Now he looks shredded and in great shape. But yeah, that definitely helps. The another storyline I wanted to get to was Tiger. I think I'm okay. He obviously finishes all four rounds. He finished dead last of anyone that made the cut. I actually surprisingly considered this a success for my expectations and that he did finish the four rounds. I think you and I both had our extreme doubts as to whether or not that could happen. He did make the cut in a field that had Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas,
Sam Burns might have missed the
Sam
cut.
Burns. There was another past champion, recent past champion that did not make the cut that I'm missing out on. But in a cut that had a lot of very talented
Yes.
players, which is so funny to me because the Masters might be the easiest cut to make in all of golf. There's only 89 people. Most events have over 100. Some have 200. It's the top 50. You got about, I don't know, 10 to 12 of those co competitors are the old Freddie couples that still play that have no chance. You have two to three amateurs that have no chance. So you just cut down an 89 person field to, I don't know, 75 at least right there. So now you just got to be in the top two thirds of the event. It's actually one of the easiest cuts to make, but numbers wise, I think.
Look at that Brooks Koepka math right there for you. Well, if you think about it, I wake up and I'm already better than half of them, and we know the other half are going to start messing up.
Yeah.
And at the end, I'm just down to 10 other competitors. Yeah, I like
Yeah. And
that. You're very
funny for
right,
him
though.
in a weekend where he was never really in contention. He made
No.
the cut. He kind of hovered in the like plus one to plus three, which actually the way Augusta played was, I don't know, like in the 20s. I think it wasn't even that far. Like it was actually fairly good. I think one of the more tougher Augustas I've seen since I've been
Yes.
watching golf the last couple of years. Obviously, that was mostly because of the wind. Especially Friday. I remember seeing like Tiger on nine, I believe, when he was finishing up that first, or actually that would be a second nine of what would be three. Just the wind from the bunker blowing into his eyes that he had to kind of turn around. There was a couple of guys like that. I mean, it was pretty windy in Michigan and it was very windy in Augusta. I hadn't really expected scores like that. I think the cut line was plus six, which is unheard of in a PGA Tour
Yep.
event, majors. That's some US Open numbers right there. So it played more like a US Open. I think I saw a bunch of tweets that it compared it to that. And people were a little frustrated because that's maybe not necessarily what the Masters is supposed to be, is that those types of conditions. But I think that's mostly because of wind as opposed to the actual course. I know people or players commented all weekend that it was much faster than they had seen in the past as far as like fairways and greens, but I would attribute mostly to the wind as far as the scores.
Yeah, I know we kind of
This
started.
went into my Tiger point, so we circle back to
I
Tiger, I
was about to
guess.
say, we started this with Tiger. I agree with you. We both said last week, you know what? Go ahead, make the cut and finish four rounds. Prove that while maybe your body can't hold up at a competitive level, and you're not going to be shooting the minus 20s anymore, but prove to yourself, prove to the world that you can still finish 4 days of golf at a, isn't Augusta relatively hilly of a golf
It's
course?
like one of the worst walks, I think they
Okay,
say.
well, if you can finish four there, I think he kind of said, you know what, I'm gonna go home and start learning Valhalla, and you'll see me at the PGA.
Which I don't think he had necessarily 100% planned on going
Yeah.
into the Masters, which is a good sign.
With that, I guess before we get into some of the other stuff, how much longer does he have exemptions into majors? Is this the last year where he has that 2019 Masters win? You get those kind of next 5 years of exemptions into majors, and then afterwards he needs to
They're all
start learning.
different. The Masters is
Okay.
for life.
No,
He
but I
is
meant like, didn't the Masters win get him exemptions into the other three as well for 5 years? Isn't that how it works? I remember seeing something about Phil
Yes.
talking about winning the US Open in 21 and how that gave him exemptions for 5 years.
PGA. Yeah, you won the PGA at Kiawah.
That was not a US Open. Am I stupid?
21, Bryson won the was it Bryson or Rahm? 2020, I think, was Rahm. 2021 was Bryson, I think.
Fair enough.
He won a PGA. It was him and Brooks
Okay. I
Koepka
am
on the
indeed stupid.
2018. Irrelevant to really to the point. I'm not sure what the exemptions are because I think they're all a little different in terms of what they are. And I know they are partially, I think they're kind of like the other tournaments where they do have some like the power to exempt from
Yep.
there. I don't think their like qualifications metrics are necessarily tried and true and that like a Tiger Woods wants to play, Tiger Woods is going to play.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
that
fair.
could be completely wrong on that, but
I was uncertain. That's why I asked the question.
the other storyline I had with Tiger was the kid who got to play with him in the final round,
Yes.
this amateur kid, fifth year kid. Big Thunder, Shipley, I think was his name, was only amateur to make the cut. Kind of cool to see a guy that like is not really, from what I've heard, a real professional prospect. He's already a fifth year transfer to Ohio State from James Madison. Like this is basically it for this kid from what I've heard. So good for him to play with Tiger Woods on the last day. And then the weird comment, I think. When the reporter after the round asks him, Tiger gave you a note on the ninth, walking down the ninth fairway or something like that, care to speak on that? And he like looks to like whoever the Augusta rep is, looks back and goes, that didn't happen. Like, what? Just a very weird situation and very Tiger-esque as far as the aura of Tiger.
Yeah, I didn't really fully hear about that. I did see the clip of him kind of looking out around, and they're like, "Well, who's he looking at?" I didn't really know the context of it. I just kind of noted you saw some of their kind of walks up and down fairways where Tiger's open and receptive, and he's kind of talking to him. Maybe he's giving him pointers, or maybe he's just being the cool uncle, if you will, for this kid. But I think that was it was a different side to kind of see that Tiger. I mean,
Very
When you
different.
like you sit there and you think of Tiger competing, he's locked in, you're petrified of playing with him because the crowd's there as well, and you're so scared to make a mistake. But it seemed like he was very loose, very open, and like you mentioned, an awesome storyline for that kid. And
Yeah,
his
it's,
caddy,
I
and
think
his
a,
caddy.
yes, and the caddy. I think it's when I think of Tiger, that's why it was so surprising, even though I think he knows he's out and it's a different Tiger, but
Yes.
I think of Tony Finau saying, in 2019, when he won the Masters, like early in the round or before the round, it wasn't even Sunday. I think it was Saturday. He was like, he like tried to start a conversation. He's like, so how are the kids? And Tiger just said, good, and kept walking. And he was like, and Finau was like, oh my gosh, this guy is totally in the zone right now. Anyways, I think the last one I have is Max Homa, a guy who is obviously a journeyman. He's a crowd favorite online. He's one of my favorite. He's probably my favorite just because of his personality online as well. In his kind of rise to the top as far as world golf rankings, I believe he's number 9 or 10 in the world right now. A Ryder Cup last year. I think 3 wins in 2 years on the PGA Tour, which puts him in small company of golfers. However, the knock was always he hasn't gotten done in majors. This is his first top 10 in a major. He had only made the cut once out of I think I'm sorry, I think it was twice out of his prior 5 Masters. To be in the hunt on Sunday, come in, I believe, tied for third. I know he had the double on that dreaded par 3 12 is something you can build on. And I think as a crowd favorite was a nice name to see at the top. And he, ball striking wise, was dialed in all weekend. It just happened. He just couldn't get it going Sunday.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add. That was kind of a, like you mentioned, way at the beginning, a relatively tame finish and kind of just a storyline that was completely encapsulated and gravitated around Scottie Scheffler, where his biggest rival was his wife's labor.
Oh, last thing I want to say, and this kind of goes to Scottie Scheffler at the end. How butthurt was Jon Rahm in the butler cabin giving away the jacket in that whole ceremony?
I
He
didn't
could
see
have at
him.
least tried to look interested in that. He kind of came out as one of the biggest losers of the week for me. I know he had that bad showing at Butler where he just looked grumpy and sad. And I get it. It's like he's a competitor having to give off the jacket to Scottie, who's basically his running mate right now. I think Rahm's 3 years older than him, but they're going to be compared to each other for the next decade, probably. But also the comments about his seemingly frustration from the fact that this golf deal does not between LIV and the PGA Tour doesn't seem to be anywhere close, nor does it seem for that to be changing anytime soon. It really does seem like he was kind of under the assumption that he would be back playing with the tour guys, within a year, and he's frustrated that that's not the case. And he obviously had a very poor showing this week. He did make the cut by a stroke and then really struggled over the weekend.
I agree completely. I think that he thought maybe, I don't know if a cheap way out is the best phrase for this, but I think he thought he could skirt some rules, collect a nice seven-figure check in the form of a signing bonus, and then 3 months later, whisk, there would be, oh, look at us, we've merged again, and I'll be playing back the tournaments that I expected to play and kind of the courses that I wanted to play. So you're completely correct. We'll see kind of how this affects his golfing ability at the other majors and if and when this merger actually happens.
Yeah, I just thought, like, just you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to make the move and that be your strategy, but just don't get so butthurt and
Yes.
like pissy pants about it. Which I like Rahm overall. I do think he has a good head on his shoulders as far as the scope of golf, but not his best showing weekend in the media or on the course. So that's all I have for Augusta, unless you had anything else.
No, I was going to say I didn't even really see any of that kind of Rahm ceremony stuff. So cool extra little topic there. Should we get to the hockey and or at least the Red Wings specifically?
Yeah, the Red Wings played three of the most electric games you'll ever see to close out
Yes.
the season. They did not make the playoffs, unfortunately. They were kind of in a hunt. One of the better down to the season hunts you'll see, especially in the NHL, from my recent memory. You had Philadelphia. The Islanders clinched in game 80-80, the third spot in the Metropolitan Division. And then you, so I, those two, you had Washington. Who ultimately got it, Pittsburgh, and the Red Wings. So you had five teams all within a point of each other going into the final game of the season. To kind of rewind, last week I mentioned the two big games with Washington and Pittsburgh, two of those five teams I mentioned, where you kind of won those. You controlled your own destiny. Everybody was within 3 points of each other at that point, and they lost both those games. Saturday, you play a good Toronto team that's going to play Boston in the first round in Toronto. You go up 4-1 in the first period. What do? They blow it 4-4 game. And then who else? Dylan Larkin scores an OT winner in Toronto to keep their season alive. They needed a point to not be eliminated. And then it came down to you basically needed 3 out of 4 points against Montreal to even have a chance. They go down again 4-1. They go down 4-1 on Monday against Montreal. One of the more electric comebacks you'll see. They score with, I believe, a minute and a half, 2 minutes left to force overtime. Lucas Raymond again in overtime, scoring the game winner. It came down to game 82, the situation. A Capitals win. They were in a Capitals overtime loss and a Detroit win. Detroit was in basically any Detroit win and any Capitals loss, whether regulation or in overtime, Detroit was in. Philly needed a regulation win and a Detroit loss to I think they would have had the tiebreak because they would have been tied and had the tiebreaker over us. So Philly was in. So let's set the scene. Detroit goes down again to Montreal in Montreal, making, Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki look like Connor McDavid. They're not. They're one of the bottom five teams in the league. They go down. It's 4-3. It looks like nothing's going to happen. No rush, couple of bad icings, pull the goalie. It looks like it's all over. A questionable icing call with 7 seconds left. The face off is pulled back. And the Red Wings score with 3 seconds left to force overtime to get their point to save their season. But 5 minutes later, I mentioned that Philadelphia needed a regulation win against Washington to have any chance of moving on. They were tied at two with 3.5 minutes left. Their coach, in an attempt to get the extra skater and therefore have a better chance at untying the game and winning, pulls the goalie. The risk with pulling the goalie is once you lose possession, it's in the back of your net. That's exactly what happens with 3 minutes left. The Capitals score on an empty net goal, given the free opportunity. They'd go on to keep that win late, just a mere minutes after the Red Wings force overtime, eliminating the Red Wings from the season in the most dramatic way possible. A team pulling their goalie in a tied game, giving another team a chance to score with out a goaltender is the reason the Red Wings are out. To make matters worse, the Red Wings do end up winning in a shootout, despite it not mattering. Patrick Kane with the winner. John Tortorella, the dinosaur he is one of the only coaches who doesn't keep iPads on the bench. He said at the time he didn't know that Detroit had forced overtime, thus eliminating their season. So it didn't even matter if they had won that game, Philadelphia. They were already out by us going to overtime. He said he was informed after the goal had already happened by the video coach that Detroit had forced overtime and that it didn't matter and they were eliminated. So just mere minutes of this video coach in Philadelphia would have perhaps prevented it. Who knows with John Tortorella? He's a character in his own right. But that was the situation and an absolute travesty. The Red Wings will not be in the Stanley Cup playoffs in 2024.
That's a perfect kind of encapsulation of the last week. I was kind of taking some notes and kind of looking back at kind of the standings of what where the Wings were over the last couple months, and it is sad as it is that it doesn't happen. If you want to sit there and find a person to blame, you can't look at John Tortorella. You can't look at the Philadelphia Flyers. You can pull up a mirror and look at the team that had an 8-point cushion a month and a half ago, or 2 months ago, before they decided to lose, what was it, 13 of 14, or some stupid number when Larkin was out. So, yes, it's unfortunate that it happens in such a way that you've got a dinosaur who doesn't know that his team's already out, or his team's on the verge of already being out, and then he does what he needed, what he thinks is best for his team, even though it's not good for the Wings. That individual isolated incident, yes, it sucks, but can't blow an 8-point gap. That's 2 weeks for free, pretty much. That's at worst 4 games. The other thing that, at least for me, is while this was an incredibly entertaining playoff race with teams that were close and you mentioned, I think the four teams within 2 to 3 points of each other all throughout the stretch, and then the four all still having a chance on the last day. This was really not about any team separating itself. It was about the Capitals being some team had to get the 8 seed. They were the only team that ended up because the Wings sucked down the stretch. The Sabres completely fell off a cliff. Not the Sabres, I'm thinking of someone else, but it seemed like every one of these teams was just losing games, and at the end, someone had to get the 8th seed.
You're right.
It wasn't really a, oh, look at this magical run, and these guys are playing some electric hockey. It's more of, well, Washington's going to get steamrolled.
Yeah, Washington goes into the playoffs with the worst goal differential of any playoff team in the history of the league, at minus, I think it's 37. To put that in perspective, the Red Wings goal differential is plus four, so bad. Yeah, you're spot on with the a lot of teams trying to lose it. Like I said, Washington had never wowed anybody all year. You had Pittsburgh actually, who was trying to lose it early on, make kind of this late push. They play their last game tonight, but they're already eliminated as well. And then you had the Islanders, who went on this kind of massive losing streak right around the Red Wings. And they were the other team in there, and then got really, really hot at the end of the season and ended up getting that third spot in the Metro and didn't even have to worry about the wild card, which is another issue in itself, in that I believe it's Carolina is going to get to play the Islanders, who have, I think, 10 less points than Tampa, who's the first wild card, who's, I believe, not the Rangers, but the Panthers are going to have to play. So that's another formatting for the NHL playoff issue that they can be saved for end of the day. But a tragic ending to the season for the Red Wings. And to kind of an outlook is there's a lot of question marks going into next year for this team. You have the big extensions coming for Seider and Raymond. They're both going to get paid as they should. They've been good young players. It's kind of been this the poster boys for the Yzerman prospects pool as in as terms of what they've come into. Edvinson came in and was a nice addition, still looked raw, still looked young in his, I think it was 10 to 12 games he played at the end of the season, but looked like a nice piece that should be on the roster moving forward. Then you have some older guys that are free agents, specifically David Perron, who played a top six role this year. 35 years old, has expressed that he wants to come back and sign with this team, but for how long and for how much is always going to be a question. And then perhaps the biggest one that it's even the insiders really don't know where this is at is Patrick Kane. He was willing to stay at the deadline and wanted to see it through this year. He said, with that said, though, he noted that it's not a foregone conclusion. It is known that kind of after the year he had, well, he wasn't necessarily prime Patrick Kane. This is a success. This is still a point per game player. This is still a top player in this league. And he wants to play more than just next year. He wants to play three, 4 more years. He wants to get to 40 years old. So a 34-year-old Patrick Kane, where he's at, we don't know. And I don't think insiders know as far as what level of interest he has in staying in Detroit, and again, whether they can reach that number with kind of the other things they need to take care of first. So that's it on the Wings.
I actually have one more question that I guess I was going to ask you, and maybe this is more of a hindsight's 2020 thing, but how could they have had such horrendous goalkeeping play? And I've been told that there's a couple of incredible goalkeeping prospects in Grand Rapids, and they were never brought over.
Yeah, that's a good question. The one that sticks out is the goaltending issue was interesting this year. You had three guys that you kind of thought could play, with Ville Husso being the number one, and he was hurt most of the year.
Yep, that's true.
And then you had this Alex Lyon step in, who was a journeyman, never really gotten a chance to play before last year and was great, and then kind of got overridden, overrode, I don't know, whatever the word would be, and fell off at the end of the year.
Oh, he was so bad.
And then you had a James Reimer who was okay to down the stretch here, but was a 38-year-old backup for the last few years and was brought in to do just that. Kosa and goalies are so funny. First of all, Kosa had a pretty average to below average year last year in Grand Rapids. He's only 21 or 22 years old, which is about when most prospects, skater wise, start dipping their toes in the NHL, I'd say on average. Goalies are more like 25, 26. I'm trying to think of a comparison in other sports, but I can't, one's not coming to mind. I think of it more as like maybe even like an offensive lineman, where those guys usually play 3, 4, 5 years of college and then go to the NFL. I guess would be kind of my only comparison, would be those guys that play are 4 or 5 year college guys and then go play in the NFL. And he really only got hot towards the middle to end of this year. And you don't goalies are so fragile as far as confidence is the biggest thing. That I think you don't want to mess with a 21-year-old's confidence when he's playing well and throw him into, the next step with a playoff run, when that's just not part of the schedule. And it's partly because Yzerman went into this year not expecting this to be a playoff team in his mind. Obviously, he confirmed that by doing nothing at the deadline. But yeah, that I think that's what I guess I never really thought that was an option. It kind of makes sense, I guess, the way the goaltending was at the end of the year. But I also, like I said, it never really crossed my mind because of kind of what I just explained.
Yeah, just kind of a question from what I've heard from more knowledgeable hockey people and kind of conclusions that I've drawn from
Yeah,
what heard
it's
over the.
interesting because the goalie pool is good in Detroit. You have Kosa, who's been great for Grand Rapids this year, only 22, I think. And then you have the kid at Michigan State, Trey Augustine, that they drafted this past year that was one of the best goalies in the country. So the future's bright as far as that position. Moving on to the NBA playoffs, and the SoFi NBA play-in tournament. I don't know what on face, like, what are your general thoughts about the plan? I think from a money generating standpoint and a buzz standpoint, and just a something to watch standpoint, it's great, and it's a great idea for the league. I also personally hate it just because it's like it's just not natural to me yet. Maybe if they do this for 15 more years, it will be. But I still just hate it for that reason.
So I'm glad you started there because that's actually where I had the top of my notes. I love the concept of it. I think the players do from a not necessarily, obviously they hate it because you're kind of bringing your you've played an 82 game season, you're now bringing it down to a couple of one game series. But I think that the argument that the people right away when they look at the play and they're like, well, this is stupid. Now two-thirds of the league gets into the playoffs. First of all, that's not true. The play-in is a play-in. If you lose one of those games, you're not in. It gives two-thirds of the league an opportunity to, but when you do that, I think people look at it only from the perspective, oh my God, the 9 and the 10 seed are getting a chance, and that's stupid because they suck. I don't people realize what it does on the front end of the play-in, in particular to the 5 and the 6 seed, and how much more important that is than being a 7 seed. I think what it does is obviously everyone knows the NBA regular season is largely ass. And is largely kind of open gym, and the guys just have some fun and jack some threes in the air. But for the last month and a half of the season, when these teams start realizing, wait a minute, we need to guarantee ourselves in the playoffs as opposed to just hope for a 7 seed. And prime example, and I'll talk about them, is the New Orleans Pelicans. You start trying, and you've got players talking about how what this does is this elevates the regular season and puts more importance. Or more emphasis on actually winning those regular season games because you sit there and you say, well, if I'm the New Orleans Pelicans, I just lost to the Los Angeles Lakers in the 7-8 matchup. My best player, Zion Williamson, pulls a hamstring and will not be playing in the against the Sacramento Kings on Friday, and we might be out. And part of that, you go back, and I don't think the Pelicans are an example of this because they are a younger team, and I'm sure they do bust their ass more often than the older star, like the Kevin Durant teams and LeBron teams might. But uh-oh, should have tried harder in the regular season. Maybe if you didn't sit there and lose by 45 on 10 random nights throughout the season, maybe you'd have been a 6 seed. And so that's where I
Right.
think what I enjoy about this is it makes winning regular season games more valuable because you can't just say what teams used to say is, oh, well, I'll be like the late LeBron James Cavs teams. I'll just flop in there as like a 5 or a 6 seed. I don't even care. And I know I'm better than you over the course of a 7-game series. That still exists, but now you need to get there.
It's a good point for the 5 and 6 seeds, but I'm not sure it really changes. I'm just not convinced it changes the mindset of these like an these 8 through 10 seeds, like as
No,
far as their nightly output in the regular
sure.
season.
And you're right. Like when you're sitting there and maybe you're a team that's still learning or you're just a middle of the pack floundering team, you're right. Like you can't just try your way to more wins because at some point there is a talent thing. But I think what
Right.
it does is it does encourage kind of just the need to genuinely win games. And if you have that ability at your disposal, you're going to be more inclined to not get caught in a New Orleans Pelicans situation where suddenly I'm stuck playing against LeBron James in a one-off game, and now I got to possibly go play Steph Curry in another one-off game, and uh-oh, my season's over. And I'm not going to talk about the Zion injury again just because like you can't point.
Right. Yeah, I think going into that first playing game, 7-8 game in the West, Lakers 110, Pelicans 106. It can be described as a Zion game. He goes for 40 points before going down with an injury, but ultimately, I guess LeBron reigns supreme. I don't know where do you see this Lakers team at as they go and play
So,
the Nuggets? Do they have a chance?
yeah, I mean, it's a rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals. From what I've seen and heard, people claim this Lakers team is healthier than the one that played against the Nuggets last year. With that said, the Denver Nuggets have the best player in basketball. They are also younger and than the Lakers are, and a little bit more athletic than the Lakers are. Do they have a chance? I mean, I would say sure. You know, it's a 7-game series. That gives you the ability to suck for a game and still be in it, unlike what we just talked about in the play-in. But at the same time, it means you have to beat Nikola Jokic 4 times in 2 weeks, and I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the actual game?
About the Pelicans and the Lakers, not particularly. It was. I kind of switched off of it for a portion of the second half to go to that Red Wings game. So I did miss a large chunk of the second half. I just kind of saw the end and kind of how the Lakers just did just enough to stay out of arm's reach of the Pelicans. But no, I actually had more thoughts about the second game.
Yeah, second game, Sacramento Kings 118, Golden State 94, an ass kicking. And what I think you can say is a stamp on this era, puts a stamp on this Golden State era. Klay Thompson 0 points playing starting minutes. Yeah, I didn't know that Trice Jackson Davis is a starter for them.
Yeah, I mean
That's crazy.
he's really kind of one of the two big guys they really have. So it was more of a you have this is what's at my disposal. I mean, we know what the Warriors have kind of become for the last 10
Yeah.
years where it's huck and chuck threes and we don't need the big guy.
Right.
So I think he's more of a starter there because he is kind of like he's the best of just like, well, we don't need a Jokic or a Giannis. We don't have emphasis on this position in our
Now
system.
being
So
cheap.
yeah, we can deal with your salary for cheap, and we can deal with just bust your ass and don't ever come off the court without sweating, and we'll make it
Yeah.
work for you. So
He's an all-time, like one of my least favorite Big Ten basketball players as a Michigan State fan. That's why I bring it up. But
yeah,
is this the end of the Golden State era?
maybe not Golden State as a whole because they've always shown that they're willing to kind of go outside the box and do things to extend their kind of, I don't know if careers is the right word, but their window of opportunity. But I think it's the end of the Klay, Steph, and Draymond trio. I think they're, I mean, you mentioned Klay Thompson's 0 points. He has been exposed the last two postseasons and has been awful. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously the injuries killed him, at least killed the longevity part of him. You'll never take away what he was before that, which was an elite two-way player. But yeah, I think it's the end of this iteration, Golden State. We know Joe Lacob is okay with spending money, in the form of luxury taxes and salary taxes, and he's like, I want to keep winning because I can make more money being relevant while also paying fines. than I can make not being relevant, not paying fines, and only kind of going off of the increase in valuation of my team based off of whatever we make through a TV contract. So I think they're going to sit there and they're going to give it one last Curry run. I think they owe it to him for 2 to 3 years, and we'll see what that means. I'm sure they'll pull some kind of rabbit out of the hat and find a way to do something where it's like, well, this is weird, and we'll see if it works.
Yeah. Do you want to kind of preview the games tonight slash the
Yes.
last game, or just straight into the
I
playoffs?
was at, yeah, I was gonna kind of talk. I mean, I think at this point they're playing the first one, the Heat and the Sixers, and this is kind of a this is like this is a dream matchup for the play-in game. You've got the playoff Heat with playoff Jimmy Butler and that kind of culture of workhorse undrafted guys against a Philadelphia 76ers team that if Joel Embiid doesn't get hurt and miss a large portion of the season, they're not going to be in this position. We just gotta call the spade a
Right.
spade. They're here because Joel Embiid missed time. One of these two teams is going to win and get to play against the New York Knicks. And to be honest, they're really going to like their opportunities there. I don't, the Knicks are good. I don't think the Knicks are great. And I mean, the other thing is that I actually kind of mentioned in the beginning, the Knicks were 14 games back of Celtics, which is funny because in the Western Conference, the gap between the first seed and the 10 seed was closer than the gap between the first and the second
Wow,
seed in the East.
that's
So,
absurd.
yeah, I don't know if you want to take this as a, oh my God. And to be fair, the Celtics were the best team in the regular season by far.
Right.
They were 7 games better than the one seed in the West. So it's not that, oh my God, the East is just so bad and the West has all these great teams. Just, I think the West has more depth and it kind of sat there and they beat each other up. And that's why they were all so congested and it made for kind of some good basketball. But yeah, the winner of this Miami 76ers series or one-off game will kind of we'll get the Knicks. Should be an interesting series. I assume the 76ers will win this game and then will probably go on to beat the New York Knicks because while I just mentioned the gap between one and two in the East, the gap between two and eight was only 4 games. So it's not like we're sitting here talking about substantially better or substantially worse
Right.
teams. And that's where I'll probably and when they're so close, I'd probably always lean towards star power and I'll take playoff Jimmy Butler or Joel Embiid over Jalen Brunson. So that's that. The later game is the Hawks and the Bulls. Cool.
Yeah,
I have nothing else to say about
I think
that.
I could name you one player in that game. That's Trae Young.
Yeah, I mean, do you count Lonzo Ball as a member of the Bulls? Because he's
No, I
technically
don't. He hasn't
getting
played in like
paid,
3 years.
yeah, I know.
Got
Yeah,
long-term COVID.
I mean, I don't know. I agree with you. I have nothing else to say about this. Whoever kind of ends up here, what I assume it'll be the loser of the first game.
Yeah.
They'll beat that team, the winner of the second game. To kind of go into the rest of the actual NBA series, there are a couple of good ones. There's also a couple of I'll start with some Magic and Cavs. Not too much star power or interest in my opinion here. I think the Cavs are a better team and will win the series. My biggest takeaway here is just kind of what happens when you surround your best player with even competent supporting cast, and that would be Paolo Banchero and the fact that he actually has competent NBA players around him and relating that to Cade Cunningham playing with a bunch of traffic cones here in Detroit for his entire career.
Pretty crazy how not hard that was to get into the playoffs for them, fine, huh?
Yeah. Imagine what happens when you have league average NBA players around what you hope to be a star. Crazy. This next one I actually think has got a little bit more oomph to it. The Phoenix Suns against the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah.
This is kind of a series of old blood versus new blood.
Yeah.
Anthony Edwards has totally taken the reins from Karl-Anthony Towns in terms of leadership of the franchise. Cat did in this is even doesn't have to deal with the fact that Cat missed some time with an injury. It's just Anthony Edwards is that kind of young, budding superstar, if you will. I don't really have a prediction because, kind of like I talked about with Jokic, the Suns got star power themselves. So I'm just very excited to watch this series, just kind of see what happens. There should be some kind of entertaining basketball played, and we'll see if what's his face, Matt Ishbia's summer of fun last year, which included massive trades and firings and cleaning house, and is basically, as we called it last summer, his virtual or his in real my GM mode, where he has so much money he can interview all he wants. We'll see if that's kind of bared some fruit for him.
Next one.
Sure. I mean, I've got the next one on my list is Lakers Nuggets. This for me, for obvious reasons, is the most entertaining series and the most
Definitely.
intriguing series. Rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals. Talked a little bit about it. The best player in the world is on the Denver Nuggets, and I think they're going to win the game. But obviously, on the other side, you have the Los Angeles Lakers, the glitz and the glamour, and that doesn't even include the fact that you have LeBron James in the series, Anthony Davis. So I'm so excited to see this and just kind of see what happens. But I would expect the Denver a victory.
Agreed. I just don't see how they match. They just don't match up. I'm sorry. Just like they don't. The other ones are kind of all TBDs. Besides, I guess you can go to the East, like
There's a couple more.
Milwaukee.
There's the Pacers, Bucks, and it's kind of weird because in the past for this, I'd scream, "Oh my God, Bucks slaughter!" because they have more star power. But Giannis is currently hurt and
Yep.
they have him listed as expected to miss the start of series, which loosely translates to we don't know if and when he will be back, and we are trying to scare the Indiana Pacers into not thinking, "Wait a minute, we just get to play against an older Damian Lillard."
Yeah, that's exactly what that means.
So like I really don't even know how to give a prediction because obviously if Damian Lillard is by himself, it becomes anybody's game. But if one of the three or four best players in the world comes back healthy, then he's obviously going to be ready and you make the Bucks a kind of a prohibitive favorite. But I can't really say much while we don't know the status of Giannis.
Right.
The other one that like you mentioned, this is kind of the last one that is still known is Clippers Mavs. And this is honestly kind of similar to the series we just talked about. Kawhi Leonard hasn't played in the last 3 weeks. And it's funny because normally I would say, oh, shocking, Kawhi Leonard not playing. But he actually put up, I think I saw 72 or 73 games this year, which is the most he's done since like 2016. So
Jesus.
I guess good for him. But yeah, he hasn't played, and he's kind of like Giannis, where they're just sitting there, mum's the word, and we're going to try and scare the Mavs. The one thing that I do enjoy about the Mavs is that kind of Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving chemistry actually hit this year. I know last year when they traded for him, it was like, well, what is this doing? There's only one ball and two ball dominant players, but I think they found a way to make it work this year. And I actually like the Mavs to beat the Clippers regardless of Kawhi Leonard's health.
Yeah, I agree. I just would like to see, because I think Luka and kind of Jokic are kind of your next ups as far as who's the face of this league now is kind of, I know Giannis is not necessarily past his prime by any means, but has kind of been the guy. I think it's kind of Doncic's league, so it's his turn to make a deep playoff run in general because he just hasn't really done that in his career yet.
I mean, he had the one Western Conference Finals run. How long ago now was 2, 3 years ago? But he was still, like you mentioned that he was at a younger point in his career. It was kind of like the LeBron at 22 going to the NBA Finals and just getting assaulted by the Spurs. I agree with you though. This is if you want to sit here and you want to become Nikola Jokic and you want to sit there and be at his level of standing with MVPs and NBA trophies, you do got to start making the run. You do got to be that guy. So I completely agree with your assessment where we got to see something from him. We need to see more deep playoff runs.
But I'm gonna go pretty basic for my pick. I think it's Nuggets, Celtics. Celtics win it all. I think this is their year after kind of getting so close the last past couple.
So, you know what's funny? While I don't fault the logic, obviously the Celtics were clearly the best team in the regular season, and they're clearly this and clearly that. Something about the Celtics, maybe it's just a history of them always coming up short and, for lack of a better
Especially with
term,
this
choke.
team.
Yeah, and with you mentioned with this team, with this core group of two to three guys, something about them always having doing that. Maybe it's kind of the poisoning the well of like, well, that those were previous teams, and we shouldn't let the ghosts of them haunt this year's team. But I don't know what it is. I don't trust Jason Tatum down the stretch, and if it comes down to it, I'll take Nikola Jokic over Jason Tatum. So I can't sit here and say the Celtics are going to series. To be honest, I might take some other players in the East over Jason Tatum, where if it gets down to a deeper series and you start playing some crunch time games, I could see him folding. I don't even count Jaylen Brown because he still hasn't learned how to dribble with his left hand.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I had on the NBA was as kind of an anti-NBAer for the regular season. I kind of tune it out. this time of year. Oklahoma City, the one seed in the West. How
Oh
did that happen?
yeah. Shai Gilgeous State Shai Gilgeous Alexander. He is sensational. You mentioned kind of some, we were talking about budding stars earlier. He is kind of that. He's kind of with that Anthony Edwards next man up type mentality. Dropped 30 points per game. Obviously Chet Holmgren's there. They've just kind of built like they've got their star, and then everyone else kind of knows their role, if you will. And that's kind of crazy to talk about Chet, because Chet himself was a top pick, and there is so much hype about that tall of a guy with that kind of skill set. So we'll see. Obviously, they've still got a million draft picks, so they could always make moves for another star to pair with Shai. But Shai is kind of the leader of that team, and they are kind of that epitome of, we're going to bust our ass in the regular season and get a good seed, if you will. It's funny, I was talking to you about this. We were talking about the Clippers. First of all, I can't believe this is soon to be 5 years ago. Shai actually came over from the Clippers in the Paul George trade, where it was, I think, Paul George and Danilo Gallinari for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 5 first-round picks, and 2 pick swaps. Which, so you're shaking your head. At the time, Paul George was he had just finished, I think, second or third in the MVP voting race. So this is not the Paul George right now. And it was also at Kawhi Leonard's request. He basically held that franchise hostage and said, "Get me Paul George, or I'm going to go sign with the Lakers."
Yeah,
So
I do remember that.
they were kind of in a itty bitty, sick, precarious situation. And obviously, Shai was not this, like, no one expected Shai in that trade to be what he was. It's just funny that it was Shai, who is now a better player than Paul George, and 5 picks and 2 swaps
Yeah.
for a Paul George at the time who was great.
Is Paul George not the most forgettable top? A guy that was arguably a top five player in the league for multiple years in a row. Like, there's no way and I know it's mostly because he never really won anything, but there's no way I remember who Paul George is when I'm 50, despite him being very good.
I'm sure there might be one more forgettable guy that I'm even forgetting about, but from the ones that I think about, like the guys who had great runs, but you'll remember a James Harden, a
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook, if you will. And I think those guys maybe got a little bit more of, I don't know if
Part
social
of it is
media hype
press,
is,
yeah.
yeah, I think they just had a little bit more kind of media coverage. And that's probably why Paul never got that, but I also think the injury never helped him all the way back to the Indiana
Yeah.
days. So I agree with you. He was incredibly fun at one point, and he was a sensational player. It's just he is going to be forgettable unless he wins something this year or next year, or I guess, and whenever before his kind of career comes to a twilight.
Yeah. I don't know. Just random thought
But
once we brought up that trade.
we do like the random thoughts that kind of drum off of a an original kind of other piece that we're kind of sharing. I don't have
So,
much else about the NBA, unless you
yeah,
got
I was
anything.
going to say, you want to close out by giving your NBA pick?
Sure. Give me the Denver Nuggets. Obviously, can't go against the best player in the world. I will try and get a little bit. Give me Denver and Philadelphia. Let's say,
Oh,
we talk about chokers. Don't get any bigger choker than Joel Embiid, Mr.
no,
Second Round
you're
Exit
right.
himself. But give me Denver and Philadelphia in the final, the two most skilled big men of all time. Denver wins again.
Love it. I love it.
Yep.
Any other topics on
No,
this
I
show?
guess the last thing I would say is maybe we preview next week. We're going to talk about next week is the week of the draft. I figure we can kind of do a first round mock, and maybe as we're kind of more inclined in the fantasy community, maybe we can talk about some of the deeper fantasy prospects if we choose to. If not, maybe we stick with the one round mock. I know you'll be talking NHL playoffs, and we can kind of do the first little run through that we just did here on the NBA side. And obviously, if something else comes up, it comes up. So I've got really nothing else to say. I will end my participation in this week's program with a unusual Hala Madrid. Turn it over to you.
Real Madrid.